Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to the Transformation Cafe with your host, Robin Misevich. Transformation Cafe, a weekly half hour of light, topical conversation about health, wellness, happiness, personal growth, spirituality, and other insights. We're glad you're here. Transformation Cafe, a fun place to nourish your soul. Now, let's get started and introduce our diners for tonight's show.
Well, good evening, good day, good morning, wherever you are in this beautiful world. Welcome to the Transformation Cafe. I'm your host, Robin Misevich, and we are back in the Cafe Book Club. We are doing Getting the Love You Really Want, and we're in Chapter 7. And Chapter 7 is really kind of interesting. It's called Closing Your Exits and talking about all about commitment. So I want to go ahead and get our co-host on right now. Miss Amy, how are you tonight?
I don't know that I can stay. I'm really not feeling comfortable. I can't make a commitment to tonight. I may have to leave.
I think you need to go read a magazine or something. Okay, no.
All right.
And Miss Michelle, how are you tonight?
I'm committed.
Well,
damn it. All right.
I have been committed.
Well, that's the typical.
I have been committed.
That's a typical relationship. We got one. We got one that's totally committed, and the other one's just like, I'm ready to leave for my life. Okay, there you go.
That is the way it goes.
That's the way it goes. Yeah. We're going to be talking about exits, but before we kind of do that, I wanted to just kind of do some of the preliminary stuff that Harville talks about in the beginning of the chapter.
May I make a comment?
I'm sure you will, and I can't stop you, so go ahead.
This chapter is called Commitment. It's not called Exits.
Our chapter says closing your exits.
Now, isn't that interesting? Mine says commitment.
Yeah. Well, okay. In the first edition, it's called closing your exits.
Interesting.
Well, there you go.
See, I was concerned you guys were just trying to exit from me. You didn't want to make a commitment. Clearly, Michelle does, but you don't.
She's committed. She's been committed. Yeah, she's, hey,
I think
I'm committed. Let's do it.
Continue.
So what the Harville really talks about is just, and through this chapter, is the importance of commitment, and it really goes into the needs we have as a child that get lost, just kind of reviewing it for people who haven't even tuned in at all about Getting the Love You Really Want, and by Harville Hendricks and his wife, Helen Hunt. And, the first half of this book is all about just all the ways that we sabotage our relationships. And ultimately, it's about really wanting to get that love and just feeling safe and having these foundational needs that are filled by a significant other. And depending what happens with our relationships with our caregivers when we're young, that could fall away pretty fast, depending on, who's around us, whether it be our parents or teachers, just friends, all different kinds of things in the level of commitment with that. Anything else you guys want to add about, just moving up to this point in the book?
Well, I'm not sure exactly what you guys have in your chapter, but what I find is really interesting, at the beginning of the latest version, he talks about how years ago the approach to working with couples, and that it still holds true, is basically you work on the power struggle in terms of not really the problem. You're really looking at problems and conflict resolving and contractual parts of relationship, and that and then what you found is that few people ever transcend that power struggle, and that's the beauty of this work. Is it, and then unfortunately, most people never get to it because they don't recognize it. So I just want to honor how important this work is to identify that power struggle and to be able to work it.
Yeah, I'll chime in.
Yeah, absolutely.
Harville was saying when he was working with couples in the standard way that what happened was that the arguments just shifted to who broke the contract first. They were still arguing all the time, but the content shifted. So you're right. They didn't ever overcome the power struggle. And Harville was was frustrated seeing that his clients weren't doing any better. And his advisors actually, he says, chided him for having a vested interest in wanting his clients to change. Because one of the tenets of being a therapist is to just, you know, offer what you can and then leave it up to the client, you know, whether or not they're going to be able to change or not. And he wanted more for people. And I think that's what really has driven his work and has brought this to the forefront, a new way of being with couples.
And I really want to honor him, man, to stay in the game.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Harville.
Yeah, and this just feels like, you know, that his you know, teachers and his senior counselors and stuff kind of patting him on the head like, oh, yeah, you're cute.
Yeah, they were like status quo.
It's going to make a difference for these people.
Yeah, they just wanted him to do what was, you know, already being done, but that wasn't working. But it was the status quo. So thank
right.
you to all of the people who break out of those.
Yeah.
patterns and those boxes to help us. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. Thank you. So one of the things, so we're talking about the commitment, and I think that's one thing that with these other counselors and teachers and stuff that Harville had been working with, nobody really gave them a foundation of different things that were required going into the, you know, really coming into couples or relationship work. And he had four different categories of things that he really had
Welcome
to commit to.
Welcome to the Transformation Cafe
Boy, what
with your host, Robin Misevit.
Boy, I don't, that, you know. Starting all over. I don't know why I did that. I did not.
He tried to leave
me.
Us.
Okay. I did. I tried to leave. You won't let me. Okay. So anyway, with the review of commitment, the number one thing he said is, you know, I really want us to be committed to having a certain number of sessions that we're going to do together and having that agreement with each other. And then the second thing he required from them was to be able to define a vision of what the relationship was going to look like. What do you want for your relationship? What's that look like? I think that's really powerful because that's really true in any relationships. It's like, you know, what do we want, you know, to have in relating to one another, and maybe what we can do to support one another and grow with one another. And then the third thing was to stay together for a specific period of time. So when, you know, you've got two people that are having conflict with one another, knowing that they're committed to being able to, you know, they're going to stay in this, to be able to talk about it, work with one another, and have it where there's a certain length of time that they're not going to just, one of the person's going to take off. Because it's something that the subconscious needs to know, and just us as our inner child needs to know, is that you're not going to go away even though stuff might get yucky. And, you know, with little kids, I'm sure we've always had that where something happened and then the person just left. And so, you know, there's that level of abandonment that we've got. Like, no, I can't be safe and being able to share myself because you could leave. And once we established that that's just not something that we're agreeing that's not going to happen. And I think it was really interesting in the book, in his section, you know, he's talking about, you know, whether it was, whether you left or when I'm not going to end the relationship. I'm not see one another. So, you know, I won't try to commit suicide or I won't murder you. There's different ways that he defined, you know, not necessarily staying in the relationship. I was like, wow, okay. Some of those were pretty intense, but thought that was interesting. And I think just showing that no matter what, I am not leaving us, you know, working together to have this be a better relationship. And then, you know, we're going to get into talking about, you know, closing, you know, exits and what that looks like in ways that we separate ourselves from the relationship with that another person. So I just think those are very, very interesting. That I love that whole idea of, you know, going back to having a relationship vision and what that would be and look like and being able to create that. And one thing that he encourages is like, you know, I think that's good in every relationship, you know, especially that one that's conscious, you know, having that conversation of like, you know, well, what do we want for one another and together in this relationship and what would that look like, and put it down, maybe have something way of defining that. And he said it was very powerful to read it every day and make it a meditation, and something that he said ultimately would, you know, be something that would help you to change, you know, your consciousness because it's something that you're visiting every day. So have either one of you ever done that with a relationship?
In calling in a new relationship, I have.
Okay, that's cool. What about you, Abe?
Yeah, I think in periods of time, when I'd have to say when there's a struggle going on, when I don't know that I've done it when there isn't. Like you said, searching for if there's a struggle, it might be a good thing to do on an ongoing basis, not only when there's a struggle or when you're hunting for it. So
right,
I'd have to
really,
you know, sit with that. But, you know, that would be a good thing to do. Although I'm sitting here in my office, and I have a prayer place where I put things, and I do have pictures of my husband and I that I do stop and look at on a regular basis and send love, and they are pictures that, for me, are what I want the relationship to be. So maybe I do.
It's ultimately a picture of the vision. That's cool.
Well, he said as part of the process was each person individually write down what it is they want, and then you look and find the commonality,
mm-hmm.
and that's
mm-hmm.
how you find your vision. Because you may have a vision, he may have a vision, but what's in common?
Yeah, and mm-hmm. my husband and I have been together for 20 years, and early in the, you know, we're both trainers, early in the relationship, well, what we do, we started this, and during the holidays, Christmas holidays, what we do is we get out flip charts, and I do what I want in this coming year in the relationship, and he does his, and then we do one together.
It's a flip chart romance.
Well, and that is, I think that's a part of it.
It's
know,
whatever works, yeah.
Yeah,
because
mm-hmm. it is a partnership. Certainly spiritually, but also business-wise in a lot of other ways. And I want to come back to the tenet that the three of us have set from the beginning of this, that it's really interesting. I'd like to play with that a bit, about a commitment towards, certainly, it's one thing if you're married, but it's and what about friendship? What about as sisters? What, you know, when do you, how do you decide to make that commitment? And when you're saying, you know, not having those exits, I mean, I don't have an answer to what I'm asking here. It's just something that I think is interesting to play with. And I know that, like, Robin and I, of course, are sisters. And so I can't get rid of her even if I wanted to. And
no way, man.
I don't. But if I wanted to, right? And but I have certain friendships that I know I have stayed in the game when it was really challenging because I had made a commitment to that friendship. So, again, I'm just kind of throwing the beach ball in up in the crowd, kids, so... anything with that?
I don't know. I don't ever talk about it with anybody. I've never talked about what my relationship is, what I want it to be, whether I'm committed with any friends.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know for me, when it comes to friendship, it's being in a place where I can be in a place of really being in a place of love and care for that person no matter what, and sometimes that feels close and sometimes it doesn't feel close depending on what it is, and more than not, if usually I have a relationship where somebody goes away, they go away, I don't necessarily am the one who walks away, but I'm, you know, I can think of a couple relationships where it kind of surprised me that I had friends that, you know, you think they're going to be lifelong friends, and then for whatever reason, you just don't talk anymore. Which is unfortunate.
Yeah, but
to me,
you
that's
did walk
but,
away. You did walk away from a friendship. I can think of one right now.
Yeah, well,
and
you know,
that's
and sometimes
okay.
it's,
I think that's okay.
Yeah, I'm
yeah,
not saying
I think
anything
sense
good
of,
or bad.
I think
but
this marriage commitment or this significant other—it's on a deeper level. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
But what if you never get married? What if you never have somebody that you don't have that kind of relationship with?
Well, that's not going to happen.
Exit.
So clear, cancel, delete on that one.
No. I don't mean it that way. I'm not pointing this at any person. But I'm just, and, you know, right? So I guess for me, I have worked this through in other relationships.
Oh, I'm definitely practicing it right now.
Yeah. So I guess that's what I'm trying to. You don't understand what I'm saying? So it's like I the exit thing in relationships, and I don't have an answer to what I'm asking. But I was like, when would that evoke? Because you know they had talked about in previous chapters that, right, it's when the commitment happens, right, that all this crazy starts happening. So right when you really say, okay, I'm making this commitment, so whatever the relationship is, then would you have, I know I do it, I know I have done it, done these exit strategies in work relationships and in friendships. Am I the only one?
Well, for me, it's more of a commitment to my spiritual growth, and that determines how who's in my life and who's not.
Mm. So I guess my point is these exit things that are happening, I know it's played out for me in other relationships, you know, work and friendship.
Right, because there have been friendships that it's like, oh, that doesn't feel good. Oh, I don't like what that person is doing. Oh, this isn't what I really want it to be. But it doesn't mean that I need to exit because there's something there for me to gain. So then I do make a commitment because there's something there for me to learn,
even though
it doesn't feel good.
Yeah. So I guess that's the thing is really understanding, right, when the exit is this pattern, not necessarily the relationship.
Yeah, before we got started tonight, before Michelle popped on, Amy was, you know, Amy and I, when we first just kind of talking about the show before we're waiting to go live, she was making a comment about how it's in every aspect of your life. I'd love you to elaborate on that a little bit, Amy.
Well, that's what I'm talking about, is I know that there's certain relationships where it just brought up those feelings that I didn't get, you know, the love I needed as a child or abandonment, you know, and like with our dad, he'd be there, then he wouldn't be there, and he'd be there, and he wouldn't be there. And so certainly it has seen that play out in friendships. It's almost like I not that my marriage is perfect, but we've healed a lot of that, so that doesn't manifest that much, a little bit, but it does still manifest in other relationships.
Sure.
So that same pattern, so I'm like, oh, crap, you know, I thought, oh, I got this figured out. No, I don't. It just comes to me in different ways.
Right.
And just honoring that.
Right. Well, I thought it was fascinating when he, in the section about the no exit decision, and he talked about how some people are the fuser and some are the isolator.
Mm-hmm.
And the fuser usually didn't get their need for attachment satisfied, and the isolator, they didn't have enough autonomy. And so the fuser, when there's a no-exit decision, feels relieved, but the isolator feels threatened. But he was talking about, like, later on in the relationship that there can actually be a flip where the isolator becomes the fuser and the fuser can become the isolator because... And this is what I found the most fascinating, was that there tends to be this invisible psychic space between people. So that if you are the fuser and you back off from trying to approach, the other person, because of the energy, will start to approach you. And it's this unwritten... Like, it's a balance that I think just we're all trying to find the balance of our autonomy and our attachment. And so that's what we're doing in relationship is to really to find the balance between that duality. And with people, we will see that as it's kind of a yin-yang. Like, as you get too much, the other person will maybe flip the role. I know that's happened to me. I'm typically am the one who is the fuser. And I know that when I would back off, the other person would approach or pursue.
Yeah, I've seen that.
Anyways, I thought this part was fascinating.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah, very, 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 very... fascinating. So some of the things that they talk about for exiting, which was like a wow when I read that part. So and these are aspects of in a relationship that Harville talks about as an invisible divorce. So there's ways that we're not getting what we need from that other person. We'll do these other activities and ways to basically feed ourselves so so that in the lack of the fact that person isn't can be, we're not being connected to that other person, and hopefully being able to heal what we need to heal. So it says, you know, what does your spouse do? You know, what do you do to avoid? What does your spouse do to avoid you? And he came up with a list. He came up with 300 different answers. Oh my gosh, we're not going to go through that. There's 300, not at all. So there's probably about maybe 30 here. But I thought some of these were interesting. So is it according to, is it like reading romance novels? I think part of that is to watching soap operas. I think that's something that goes along with that too. Disappearing into a garage for these guys having their man cave, that kind of thing. Camping out on the phone. So, and you know, if you think about camping out on the phone, I mean, you know, this was when this one was written, it was before cell phones. So these kids all camping out on the phone. But yeah, you know, even just looking at relationships now between just people, where people go to a restaurant or something and they're on their phone, not really relating to one another, even when they're going to have a meal together. Worshipping their cars, spending too much time with their kids, volunteering for every committee at church, spending too much time with your hobby, spending time with your mom, having an affair, avoiding eye contact. Even something subtle like that, avoiding eye contact. So you can't really have not encouraging conversation, you know. Memorizing every word of the New York Times. Boy, that would take a long time. Falling asleep on the couch, being a sports junkie, coming home late for dinner, fantasizing while making love, being sick and tired all the time, not wanting to be touched, 4 scotches at night, spending too many evenings with the Rotary, lying, refusing to make love, having sex not making love, living on the tennis court, bulimia, jogging 10 miles a day, going on a weekend fishing trip, going shopping, having his own apartment. I was like, wow. See, I think if you're having a relationship, somebody's got their own apartment. Oh,
okay, so Robin.
Uh-huh.
So are there any exits that you've uncovered in that process for yourself?
Well, when it said sleeping on the sofa, in my, you know, I'm a morning person, so by the end of the day, I'm like, turn the TV on, and I'm usually within about 15, 20 minutes, no matter what I'm watching, I'm usually falling asleep. So there you go. So I'm definitely guilty of that one, that's for sure. I tune out from myself.
Yeah. I tune out from myself. I might eat something sweet and just eat and eat and eat, or I might watch TV. So there are times when I just do it just to me.
Yeah, I you know, for me, I do it in ways that look very productive, like working or organizing stuff.
Mhm.
And so, you know, how can you get faulted for that, right?
Yeah, well, you look like you're being very productive. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Well, it's a good manipulation, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You can't, right, which is what we're doing. We're manipulating ourselves.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so I think that's what's important, to really start looking at that. And, you know, only we can really know the truth of when we're exiting.
Well, he gives a question to ask. And the question is one of the reasons I'm doing this activity to avoid spending time with my spouse?
Mm-hmm.
Because what he says is, like, it can be confusing. Like, what is an exit? What's an essential activity or a valid form of recreation? You know, because it is valid to do your work. It is valid to organize. It is valid to fall asleep on the couch at the end of a long, hard day. The question is one of the reasons I'm doing this activity to avoid spending time with my spouse? And I would add, or because my spouse is avoiding spending time with me.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and
I agree with that part of it.
Any behavior can be an exit. And again, only you, if you're really being honest with yourself, is going to know that.
Right. And it seems like when you talk about these things like, you know, there's a no exit commitment, you think, okay, well, you're not going to leave the relationship. But really that no exit of leaving the relationship is a fairly easy commitment to make. It's these smaller ones that are harder to make because they are the ways that we soothe ourselves when we're not getting our needs gratified. And to let go of those things while we haven't found a way to get what we need can be pretty bleak. You know, they're mm-hmm. there for a reason. They're serving a purpose. They're helping us in a way. So
Harville says, you know, why do we spend so much time avoiding intimacy? He said there are two very good reasons, anger and fear. Why the anger? In the romantic phases of relationship or intimacy, people find it relatively easy to relate because they are filled with an anticipation of a wish fulfillment. Remember, that's that mom and dad or the doctor, whoever, they roll into one, that they're going to be getting their needs met. And yet, you know, as relationship goes on, they can feel angry or betrayed for the fact that they're, you know, those agreements have been broken. So part of that's just, you know, having those expectations that this person is going to be providing things for me. And so the other reason is an intimacy for fear, especially a fear of pain. And it's that on an unconscious level, many people react to their partners as if they were the enemy. Any person, for their partner, a parent, or next door neighbor who's received by an old brain, or we talked about the reptilian brain, to be a source of the need for gratification, and then appears to be withholding that gratification, is cataloged by an old brain as a source of pain that raises us to a specter of death. And where we wind up, you know, having that fear of death for the fact that the, you know, those things that we're wanting to heal within ourselves are never going to be able to come to fruition. I think those are really interesting. That's very deep.
It's
kind of
very deep,
for sure.
And it's so subtle too, because you haven't got any clue that you're viewing your spouse as the enemy.
You're a death to me.
Right. Well, I was like, right,
you look the other way around. You're like,
you.
I wish you would die. Okay, no.
Well, it really comes down to that. That reptilian brain is I'm going to kill you, or you're going to kill me.
Yeah.
That's
right.
What it comes down to.
But
wow,
I think, and
yeah,
here he talks about why the heck do we do all this, right? And uh-huh, he says, and the process of doing it, they said it requires a lot of soul searching for people to identify their own exits and the reasons behind them. And he says once that takes place, the exits become easier to narrow and eventually close. Talking openly about them creates a deeper sense of connection between the two individuals and reduces their need to stay isolated.
Mm-hmm. He also says start with eliminating the easiest ones.
That's good.
Yeah, right. Don't go after the
big monster.
You know, like if you're organizing 5 nights a week, just organize 3 nights a week.
There you go.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Or if you're on every committee at church, back out and only do one. There you go. And things like that. And I think that's good, too, because it shows, like, don't stop, you know, interacting with other people, but recognize, you know, how is there creating places to where you can avoid instead of actually, you know, engaging with someone. That's really what we're talking about.
Plus, you don't want it, like, I mean, if you haven't been really interacting and, deeply connecting with someone for a while, you just need a little bit of extra time at first.
Right.
That's,
I think that's true. Yeah, yeah. It's like, wow, I've been around you. You know, you're used to maybe an hour a day, and you get 5. You're like, wow, overload.
Right, because it's not even just being around with them. You're actually connecting, you know,
right,
which
yeah,
can be very threatening.
Yeah.
Well, and
it can be, you know, full-time,
right?
2 weeks on vacation together when you don't spend time together. That's like, whoa, talk about overload. So there you go.
Well, and they said this work takes courage, and like you were saying, Michelle, it's, you know, we exit from ourselves because there may be things that we don't want to see, and if you see them, you know, that kind of starts the chain of I got to do something about it.
Well, yeah, and it also can be like I don't know what to do about it at times,
right,
too.
Absolutely, absolutely, most of the time, right?
Like that's why I'm gonna go. Okay, I'm gonna go clean out a drawer. You know, it's like I know how to do that. I don't know how to fix this thing, but I know how to organize that drawer.
Right. Yeah, it does. It gives you a sense of control.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
So I guess the takeaway from this chapter is to, you know, just really look at the things that you do with your significant other, with just and really like we're talking about every aspect of relationships you have with people, and ways that you feel like you're being able to be engaged and have fun, or have areas where you're feeling abandoned and disconnected with people, and what you do in the process for that, and being brave enough to maybe have this conversation about, you know, I miss you and I'd like to spend some time with you, and what would that look like for one another.
Yeah, and it's really not even just spending time because you can be together.
Right.
I mean, he talks about the date where they went hiking and they brought another person, then they went and watched a movie, and then they, you know, they were together the whole day and they never actually connected. So it's
more than
just spending time together. It's really actually connecting with each other.
Yeah, it's very, very important. So, you know. Just like the cafe, you know, connecting with one another. Cheers. There you go. As we all say, I took a drink. That was good. Yeah. Grabbing my tea here. Well, as was always, 30 minutes ago, super, super fast. This was a really fascinating chapter. Thank you, ladies. I think it was a great conversation. And I look forward to our next session that we're going to have on that. Huh?
Can we exit now?
We can. I don't know. Like,
are you doing it to avoid me?
I'm working on my drawers right now, even as we speak.
There you go. She's working on her drawers. Okay, there we go. There we
get
go.
Out of my drawers.
Well, next chapter. Get out of her drawers. Exactly. Our next chapter is going to be creating a zone of safety. So that sounds like a really wonderful thing. So, as always, thank you for joining us here at the cafe. Any questions, comments? We'd love to hear from you on the show. And thank you, Miss Amy and Miss Michelle, for joining us.
Thank you. Woo-hoo.
All right, and we'll see
left.
You next year. Days left. There we go. We're exiting. And ever again, have a great week. Thanks for joining us.
Bye.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the Transformation Cafe podcast. To learn more, visit transformation-cafe.com for show notes, guest information, and links to previous shows. You can also subscribe to the Transformation Cafe podcast on iTunes. Join us again next time at the Transformation Cafe, a fun place to nourish your soul.